in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
You think we've gotten too radical with our message? Well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory.
Oh, B&E with you. It is busy on a Thursday. Buck Ons and Buck Offs. Buck Off Thursday brought to you by Austin American Shaman. We've got them all morning. You deliver them as well on the Specs text line. Who deserves a pat on the back? Who has earned a kick in the hindquarters, including the Texas game plan on Saturday, the Texas execution of the bad game plan on Saturday, the Texas fundamental blocking and tackling on Saturday have all been bucked off.
Yeah.
Mental errors. It's still hard to believe it was a three-point game in the fourth quarter. And as you said, Brian Davis coined it the closest blowout of all time. And it was. And that's the frustrating part. It was there to be had if you could win the last 10 minutes. But they certainly could not get out of their own way on Saturday. We'll see if they can turn the page on that. Kansas, the next opponent. Also, if you're a baseball fan, Astros-Yankees tonight. We'll talk between now and the end of the show with two of our favorite baseball guys. Go deep dive with Gene Watson, director of pro scouting and assistant to the GM with the Royals. His thought on this matchup tonight. Greinke, who, of course, they had in Kansas City, he's very familiar with, and Tanaka, and then the rest of the series. Also, in the 9 o'clock hour, Steve Sparks will join us, former big league pitcher who's the Astros color man on radio, who does a tremendous job, one of my favorite people to listen to. So we'll talk to Sparky and Gene Watson this in the next 2 hours. We'll also hit some football, previewing the football weekend, which begins tonight. Right? I don't know what to make of the Chiefs, Buck. I know they're good. They were 4-0 and they were blazing. Then all of a sudden the Colts rolled in on a Sunday night and held them to 13 points. The Texans rolled in last week and held them to 24, and really they spotted them in 10 and then dominated the football game. I don't know what to make of the Chiefs. Well, it'll be interesting to see tonight. And the Broncos, meanwhile, turning back the other way. They started 0-4, and they've won two in a row. And it seems like Vic Fangio starting to figure some things out in Denver.
Well, I trust that the Chiefs' offense will get itself. It will right that ship a little bit, run the ball a little bit better, and score some points against Denver's defense. I'm still not sold on the Chiefs' defense. Is just kind of...
That's the thing. It's there for you to take it if you can run the football. Now, we heard the sound yesterday from Brian Baldinger talking about how good Laremy Tunsil is. The Broncos' offensive line not as good as the Texans at this point.
No.
And can they line up and run the football? And this should be it. And the Chiefs have been great against the AFC West.
Speaking of a game of being excited about, the Texans versus the Colts is going to be an awful lot of fun. And I'm not saying anything about units, but man, I like the Texans in that game.
I like that you like them, but now I don't.
What do you mean by that?
I prefer you're all over the Colts. I mean.
No. I was all over the Texans last week too.
Okay.
I love the way they play. I just like the way they...
They're getting physical, people.
But their quarterback is having a good time doing what he does.
Yeah, and they're protecting him. And now all of a sudden he's comfortable in the pocket. The other thing you got to give Bill O'Brien credit for, who, Bill O'Brien's mantra is kids. He's not like any other coach, but it really is big for him, is improving week to week. It's an improvement league. You got to keep getting better.
Carlos Hyde is the one who's that's awesome.
I feel like his team's buying into that. And O'Brien took a lot of heat early for the trade for Tunsil and the other trades he made, but they're starting to pay off because this offense is becoming a real handful. And one other stat on Bill O'Brien and his Texans, the last three games, they've won three in a row. The ball's coming out of Deshaun Watson's hands in 2.66 seconds. So they've understood, A, we got to protect him better, and the ball's got to come out.
He needs to get rid of the ball, yes.
And to me, I kept saying that when they were struggling early, is these are all new guys. I mean, Laremy Tunsil just got here. Duke Johnson just got here. Carlos Hyde just got on this team. Kenny Stills, who's still battling a hamstring. And they're putting two rookies on the field and on the offensive line. Let's just see how this thing emerges. Can they keep getting better? And this will be a huge test for them because the Colts in Lucas Oil Stadium have been kryptonite for them, even without Andrew Luck. And, of course, the Colts beat them last year in the playoff game and just dominated them in the playoff game and in Houston. And that, you speak of physical teams. Colts are a very physical football team.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And for the Cowboys, I don't feel good for them. I just don't. I mean, I look at the Eagles head coach. He seems to find ways to right their ship. Even when they start slow or they start fast and they have lulls, I expect that he'll make changes, even though they're hurting the secondary, to get things done offensively, to get his quarterback going, to get his run game going. I don't know what to expect from Jason Garrett except for the same old thing. I just
yeah. Well, and but I also think, look, this is you know, Bill O'Brien, Jason Garrett. That's a great debate because they've both been under fire in both Houston and Dallas. But Bill O'Brien has the luxury of having the better quarterback.
Yes.
I mean, you say what you want. I've watched every snap Deshaun Watson's played as a Texan. He has got elite traits. He's an elite-level quarterback.
Speaking of twists and stunts, I watch how Cowboys handle theirs lately, and it's not good.
He has a chance. He's one of the guys that if you protect him, can carry a team. I mean, he can beat you by himself. I mean, he's only 24 years old, but he shows some of that Russell Wilson stuff. He shows some of that Aaron Rodgers stuff. He shows some of that I can make plays, whether I'm running or throwing or running to throw. And we just haven't seen that from Dak Prescott yet. So, you know, it's a bad combination because it's safe to say Dak needs everything around him to be right if he's going to be effective throwing the football.
The mental game of being a quarterback, as much as the kid from the Ravens has really kind of come a long way in 2 years, he's not like Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson, in his mind, the game is really has slowed down for him, and I think he understands a little bit better.
He'd much rather throw than run.
He doesn't really want to run.
Hey, let's get the headlines, and then we'll dive back into these topics, plus baseball on the brain for sure, buck-ons and buck-offs, but first the news, I can talk. Top Gun, Law and Equipment Rentals bring them to you. Start with Texas football. Longhorns continuing their game week prep for the Kansas Jayhawks on Saturday. They can get back up after that beatdown in Dallas. After practice last night, both Texas coordinators met with the media for the first time since that loss at the Cotton Bowl. Defensive coordinator Todd Orlando weighed in on his unit's struggle with the fundamentals.
The missed tackles were glaring, so we went out on Tuesday and we addressed it. We did a whole bunch of live work and, you know, and our kids responded really well to it. You know, there's technical things, there are angle things, but things that, like any fundamental or technique, we're going to rough the heck out of it until it gets resolved.
Texas and Kansas, 15th-ranked Horns are 4-2, 2-1 in Big 12 play. Les Miles and his Jayhawks, 2-4, 0-3 in the conference. The game kicks at 6 o'clock. Of course, you'll hear it live right here on the Horn. And across the Austin Radio Network, pregame coverage starts at 1 o'clock, and it starts right now all the way to kickoff. Autopsy report on former Longhorn running back Cedric Benson has been released, and it reveals that Benson had likely not been drinking the night that he was killed, but he did have a minor amount of THC or cannabis in his system at the time of the August motorcycle crash that took his life and a female passenger's in West Austin. Benson had a blood alcohol level of 0.02. Legal blood alcohol limit is 0.08. And according to toxicologists, the low number is more consistent with ethanol produced by the body during decomposition than alcohol consumed that night. NFL Week 7 open side, as we mentioned. AFC West battle, Chiefs and Denver. Chiefs 4-2, but have lost two straight. Broncos 2-4, but have won their last two games. And in baseball, as expected, Mother Nature, winner of yesterday's Game 4 in the ALCS. That means four games in 4 days, if necessary. They'll play tonight. Zach Greinke, Masahiro Tanaka, your starting pitchers from the Bronx.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment.
Get a free steel leaf blower or chainsaw with a purchase of any zero-turn mower in stock for the month of October.
TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
Hey, I mentioned Masahiro Tanaka in the postseason buck. Dating back to Game 5 of the 17 ALCS, Tanaka's 4-0. He's given up just two runs in 23 innings, an ERA of .78.
Yeah, bring on Greinke.
He struck out 23 and walked only four. He has been the Yankees' best postseason pitcher in the last you know, 3 or 4 years. He's really, really good, and that's what the Astros will deal with tonight. Greinke, on the other hand, has not been great in the postseason. You know, kind of like Clayton Kershaw, they're both great in the regular season,
right,
but have not been good in the postseason. And I think a lot of that, especially for Greinke, is he's not a power pitcher, which gives Tanaka all the credit in the world because he's not a power pitcher either. But his deception, his split-finger fastball that just falls off the table is ridiculous. And you got to give credit. But Greinke, you know, he barely breaks 89, 90 miles an hour. He's got to be on. And his changeup is his best pitch. And we'll ask Gene Watson about this at the bottom of the hour. And the changeup is what has hurt him in the postseason. He got rocked by the Rays on hanging some changeups. Normally that changeup for him kind of looks like a split-finger pitch because it's supposed to drop and start as a strike and drop out of the zone. But it has not. It's been hanging, and that's what Gleyber Torres hit for a double and a home run in his six innings of work in Game 1. And Rays rocked him in the ALDS. So there's your matchup tonight. It would be Verlander tomorrow night against James Paxton back in New York as well. Also on the Cedric Benson story, I don't know what that adds. You know, the original police report did indicate that speed was a factor in that crash, so it's safe to say that the motorcycle that Cedric Benson was driving was going at a high rate of speed and certainly over the speed limit. But, you know, there were a lot of people with the narrative that he was out drinking and he had a problem with alcohol in the past or problems. But the police report or the autopsy indicates that was not the case.
Yes.
and that he was not drunk. And arguably, based on the toxicology story I read, that 0.2 could easily have been ethanol produced upon, you know, his passing. Mm-hmm. Then he might not have had a drink at all. Now, he did have cannabis, a little THC in his system, so that would be taken into account as well. But it's still a tragedy, and the speed was a factor.
Horrible. And speed was a factor, but it makes me feel a little bit better. I know it doesn't make his family feel any better, but the fact that somebody can't pin that a guy was downtown drinking, he was drunk and got on a motorcycle with a female, that there's a lot to be said about a responsible guy, because he was downtown.
Yeah, he had been. And yeah. But according to the report, not drinking, and we know, I'm not a chemist, but THC and cannabis can be in your system for a long time. Doesn't mean he was out smoking or doing anything that night.
Right, right.
So, it's not exact, but that's the word from the Cedric Benson side of things, and still
what it seems like is exact that he was not drunk.
Yeah.
On that motorcycle.
I think that's an absolute
yes.
fair statement to make.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, so those are the among the top stories. We also have buck-ons and buck-offs. This one says buck-off to the reporter who released the Cedric Benson blood alcohol level, getting ripped on Twitter because he wasn't drunk. Well, I think the fact that Tony Polhetsky released it was, it's a good thing for Cedric, is it not?
Yes.
I mean, it's privacy, and you could argue he shouldn't, but, you know, that
Oh, that's not a public record? But you can't.
Yeah, it would be. Freedom of information.
Right.
You should be able to get a hold of that as soon as it's done. So, yeah, this says Puka, guys, is going to go off. Puka Williams, Kansas.
Puka's going to get his. He's good.
He's a tremendous player.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, Carter Stanley is the quarterback. They don't really throw the ball down the field that well. And who knows what to expect from this 34-year-old offensive coordinator of Kansas who, you know, last season and starting this season was an analyst.
Who knows what to expect from Les Miles?
I don't.
Who knows? I know this. If Puka's the guy to beat you, then there'll be a lot of questions on a Monday.
Oh, well, look, you know, here's what I expect from this game for Texas. The line is 21 or 22-ish. Texas will win by between 18 and 23 points, and it'll float around there in the fourth quarter whether they cover or not. That's what they've done all year long. So
then they tend to put some guys back there in the back at the end. They give up about 14.
Well, I mean, if you want to get into the science of the backdoor cover,
yes,
like Texas did on Saturday, Texas doesn't have a lot of depth, and if they do get a lead in this game, you can expect to see some really young guys in the secondary.
There you go,
really young guys playing defense,
and then you'll still see Puka and everybody else.
Well, because look, quite honestly,
they need new work.
You know, Tom Herman needs some good news at this point after the loss, but you know, if you could build a lead and get some guys, because look, after this game with a 2-4 Kansas team that's 0-3 in the Big 12. You've got to go to Fort Worth, you come home for Kansas State, and then your back-to-back road games with Iowa State and Baylor. You know, this stretch is difficult, and they need to get some guys healthy. And they can't get anybody else hurt at this point.
No.
But because they're so depleted on defense, they've got to get some young guys on the field. They've got to get some young linebackers on the field to see if they can play, because you may need them here coming up. You know, we've talked about Jeffrey McCullough with a shoulder issue. You know, the Juwan Mitchell, the junior college transfer, is dealing with an elbow. So, yeah, it's a mash unit on that defense. So I do think Puka Williams will get his. But that's what I keep saying. Texas has to win these games moving forward with a buttoned-up offense that's creative, imaginative, and is built around Sam Ehlinger, and then a special teams that wins the field position battle. That's going to be the key for Texas, because that's the one thing people aren't talking about enough in the Cotton Bowl game, the hidden yards that Texas lost on special teams. Average starting field position for Texas in that game was inside their own 17-yard line. For Oklahoma, it was near their 40. That's, you cannot win football games average teams like that.
And that can be coached. That's just a matter of saying, stay where you are. Let's start at the 25 no matter what. I don't care if you catch it at the 20. Take a knee, we'll start at the 25. You can tell a player that. You don't have to leave it in his hands to make a decision on should I go or should I not go. You have the ability to say no.
And as you've said, I mean, the ongoing problem, if things consistently keep happening, that's bad coaching, right? I mean,
yes.
Tackling has been a consistent problem all year. You know, the offensive line not playing well, that was the first time we've seen that this year.
True.
You know, Sam struggling was the first time we've seen that. The receivers not winning 50-50 balls, first time we've seen it. So,
but some of those were the basic things, the basic twists. You do that practice all the time.
But the frustrating things for me, and I'm not saying I wasn't frustrated by a lot of it, but when it's the first time we've seen it all year, you can call it a bad game, right? You have a bad, we talked National Mulligan Day. But the stuff that continues to happen is the real troubling stuff, because...
And that's special teams to me.
Yeah, the special teams, the missed tackles, and then, you know, Duvernay for the kickoff returns, but Deshaun Jameson was back to field a punt that he called a fair catch. He would have caught it at the 20-yard line. Instead, he backed away from it, let it bounce, and it bounced down to the 5.
And in a game that you won, your senior defensive back comes sliding up for a ball that bangs off of him.
Yeah.
Or he probably shouldn't even been back there.
Yeah, and that's been an ongoing problem, that punt return thing. And, in the LSU game, the wind was a factor. There was no wind at the Cotton Bowl. I mean, it was a very calm, beautiful day. That kind of stuff has to stop, or you will lose more games.
And in my mind, that's where I need to see the freshman. I mean, I know he's dropped one. He needs to be the guy back there. You need to have faith
that
he's going to get it done.
Hidden yardage, gentlemen.
Yeah, that's what we just said. I mean, the hidden yardage in that game was huge for Texas, and among other things. They lost every category, and it was a 3-point game in the fourth quarter, which, the closest blowout of all time, as it's been called.
Let me ask you guys about a question about the NFL. Are you guys 3-2? I think I'm taking a guess that they're 3-2. The Raiders. Are you thinking that John Gruden looks like I thought he was going to be like a gimmicky kind of coach and just kind of there. Just he's making a lot of money. But do you see any improvement in the Raiders that they're pretty decent at 3-2 right now?
Yeah, they're better than I thought.
Okay.
They've been outscored by 20 points, though, this year. So they're kind of a deceptive 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sure what you're getting with them. But, you know, they've lost Vontaze Burfict for the season, who was one of their captains at linebacker. But yeah, I think they've overachieved, and I think the biggest and most surprising win they had was the game in London when they beat the Bears. That was impressive. They've also got a win in Indianapolis. I think you have to look at the Colts. Remember, they got off to a 1-2 start with losses to the Chiefs and Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
But they've got a win over Denver, win over the Colts, and a win over the Bears now.
Pretty good wins.
They took their bye last week after the London game, which is normal, and now they go to Green Bay this week. And yeah, I mean, if you can go in, you know, Green Bay is, they're just coming off that Monday night game where they survived the Detroit Lions controversially.
You're right. There's another one.
Aaron Rodgers is dealing with injuries at his receiver position with the, what's his number one receiver? It's jumping out of my head.
Devontae Adams.
And then Geronimo Allison's hurt too. And who knows who he's got to throw to. Can I mention this on Aaron Rodgers, which is pretty incredible because they're playing the Raiders this week at noon at Lambeau Field. It was Aaron Rodgers, according to the reports, and even Matt LaFleur, that when Geronimo Allison got hurt and they were down receivers in the fourth quarter of that game, he was the one that went over and said, "Hey, what about number 13? Can we get number 13 in the game?" And that's Alan Lazard, the kid that we saw at Iowa State, the big tall receiver,
yeah,
who hadn't been getting much run. And it was Aaron Rodgers went over and said, "Hey, what about 13? Apparently their lockers are right next to each other, and they've worked a lot in practice. And Lazard got on the field and caught that big touchdown pass. So Aaron Rodgers saying, "Hey, coach, put the kid in. Let's go. See if we can make something happen."
Plays in the NFL, yeah.
Yeah, and I liked Lazard when he was at Iowa State. He was a handful.
And the other guy, little fantasy nugget there.
There you go.
And the other guy that I want to see what happens to this weekend after a week off is Baker Moneymaker versus the Pats.
Well, he didn't have a week off.
He didn't? They
lost to the Seahawks.
Okay, that's
no,
true.
No, he gets a week off this week.
He gets a week off. Okay,
yeah, they won't be playing this week.
All right, then they play the New England Patriots. And somebody said, "What do you think the over-under will be for interceptions against that Pat secondary?" I say 3.
3.5. Well, he's averaging. He's got 11.
About two a game. Make it 4.
About 2 a game. That is the best secondary and best defense in football. The Brown season is sinking. Yeah, Raiders, give you credit. I'd forgotten they're 3-2 because they didn't play last week. They'll be in Green Bay.
They're a strong running team, though.
Yeah.
And that's Gruden's identity.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons they took Josh Jacobs, a kid out of Alabama, one of their first round picks.
They must not be doing what they generally do, is lead the league in penalties. It must have gotten better under John Gruden with that, because generally they are the absolute worst in the NFL year in, year out. Maybe they've done some things with that.
Well, the one thing I would say about the NFL that we've learned, and if you're not, because it's a knee jerk reaction league, but it's a long season, and that's why I mentioned Bill O'Brien talking about improving week to week and just keep getting better. Because remember, this time last year, the Cowboys were 3-5, right? Middle of October, 3-5, and won the division. Texans started 0-3 and ended up winning the division. So teams right now that you're looking at that are underachieving, that you're looking at, who gets better as the year goes on? Those are the teams that we'll see at the end.
Rams need to.
We know New England. Well, by the way, if you're a Cowboys fan, you got to like this nugget out of the National Football League, that the Rams acquired Jalen Ramsey, of course, to hold down the corner spot for them.
Guess what? His bag is better. He's playing this week.
Of course he'll play. But you know who almost had him? Eagles. Eagles were the top contender for Jalen Ramsey, and they were unwilling to pay the price that the Rams did, two firsts and a fourth. So the Rams got him. I mean, Ramsey was almost an Eagle, according to a lot of people on the inside.
A lot. Two firsts.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're a Cowboys fan, you're like, thank goodness that I don't have to see Jalen Ramsey locking up my best receiver, because the biggest issue the Eagles have right now is their pass defense, and they don't have a number one corner.
They do not.
And Ramsey obviously would have given them. We know they have a great front seven and can really get after the quarterback at Philadelphia, but they weren't willing to give up what it was going to take to get Jalen Ramsey, so the Rams pick him up. So that's a little NFL. It's a great weekend in addition to the college football weekend. Coming back, we preview baseball, Game 4, ALCS. Also, the World Series is set with the Nationals on the National League side. We'll talk to Gene Watson, our baseball insider, director of pro scouting with the Kansas City Royals. Coming back.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Hey, the Horn is partnering with Randall's to give you tickets to the Texas-Kansas game this Saturday at DKR. Chad and Kevin will be live at Randall's Westbreaker and Research today for your chance to win from 3 to 7. That's Westbreaker and Research, the Randall's location. And, of course, if you win the tickets, don't forget you're upgrading two of our four winners today to the Ultimate VIP Experience as part of that game with Kansas on Saturday. All the details at hornfm.com. And we mentioned we've got a pair of tickets to give away to the Texas game, which we will do at some point between now and 9:15. Okay? 9:15.
Sounds good.
We'll give away a pair of tickets. You could be at DKR. Wonder what kind of crowd. You know, tomorrow, I should mention this on a programming side, we're going to be visiting with Chris Del Conte tomorrow at just after 8 o'clock. So at the top of the hour at 8, be with us, set an appointment. Chris Del Conte be with us to talk about the first home game in a month and obviously what went on at the Cotton Bowl. Also, his thoughts on the new law out in California and how, you know, the Big 12 in Texas is planning for that, as well as the new student. Remember the last home game, the Oklahoma State game, there was the somewhat of a fiasco with the student section and getting their wristbands and getting their tickets and getting into the game, and they've got a new plan. So we'll let Chris lay that out for you tomorrow. Always great to catch up with Chris Del Conte. That'll be tomorrow at 8 o'clock. So, yeah, it's interesting to see what type of crowd this will be on Saturday. I don't know.
70, 75,000?
No. They're past that deal. I mean, the season tickets are at a record level.
Get your $5 tickets at HEB.
It's going to be a beautiful night.
Who's playing?
Kansas is playing Texas.
No, I know. The venue. Who's the
band?
Music? Oh, it is Prince's backup band.
Ooh, the Revolution.
The Revolution. Well, and I don't know if that includes Sheila E.
She's still playing music.
I don't know.
Maybe Morris Day.
Yeah, the Revolution.
Maybe Morris Day can pop
Morris
out
Morris Day and the Time?
Yeah, the Time.
Yeah, that'll be the Longhorn City Limits concert on Saturday about 4:30. Hey, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline when it's time to talk some baseball. We love talking to Gene Watson, Director of Pro Scouting and Assistant to the GM there with the Kansas City Royals. Wealth of knowledge on all things baseball. He's out in Arizona for the Arizona Fall League. What's up, Gino?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, Gene. Yourself?
Everything's wonderful. Another day in paradise.
Hey, you got to keep those horns up, right? It was a rough game on Saturday, but long season. Long season for those Longhorns.
I felt like we lost by 5 touchdowns when I left the Cotton Bowl, but
felt that way.
It is a long season. I've already started talking about December 7th when we face them again. So we'll see how it goes.
Love that. All right, so we've got a matchup tonight, Yankees Astros. What do you make of the pitching matchup? You know, you guys had Zach Greinke in Kansas City, so you know him well. When he got traded to the Astros, you came on and talked about how competitive he is and how you know, he could have played, you know, been a professional in several, maybe other sports. He's that competitive and that athletic, but hadn't been good in the postseason, and he's facing Tanaka, who has been phenomenal as a postseason pitcher. How do you see the matchup?
Well, this is a really, really big game for the Astros, because if they can get tonight, they've pretty much put the series away for the most part. I mean, it's a situation where, you know, that everybody talks about how regular season wins don't matter, and you're talking about a team that one home field by 4 games, and in every situation where a team wins a world championship, somewhere along the way, they get a fortuitous act in a series. You know, in 03, we had the Bartman foul ball. In 15, we had the Correa ground ball in game 4 of the first round. And people don't realize how big that rainout was last night. And if Houston's not home field advantage, that game is played in Houston and it swings back to New York and there's no issues with any weather. But now you've got to go 4 days in a row and you've got Greinke, Verlander, and Cole, which is huge for the Houston Astros. And you've got a bullpen in New York Yankees that nobody has pitched 3 days in a row. So now you've totally altered the series in the in the way that Aaron Boone's got to manage it. And it's going to be big for them to get innings out of their starters right now. And you're talking about a situation where their starters have thrown two innings less than their bullpen. They really rely on their bullpen. So if Greinke can get this win tonight, it really puts Houston in the driver's seat to match up against Nationals in the World Series.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where the Astros are. They feel really, really good about it. They have to. But what about Greinke? What do you think needs to be? In this postseason, his changeup just hasn't been changing much. He's been kind of leaving it out over the plate, and he threw one to Gleyber Torres in game one that he hammered, one for a double, one for a homer. His changeup has to be better if he's going to be effective.
Yeah, he's got no margin for error. I mean, he's had to reinvent himself. He's not the 94, 96 four-seam guy. So he's really had to reinvent himself, and it's going to be difficult in that ballpark. But really all you're trying to do is hold serve against Tanaka, try to get to that bullpen, get some early runs, and Tanaka's just been unbelievable in the postseason. So, you know, he's really got to try to hold serve and get the game, you know, into the later innings where the offense can kind of take over against the bullpen.
You know, well, the Astros have the upper hand. You still have to beat Verlander, and for the Yankees, if they beat Greinke, which I think they will, and they don't beat Verlander, that thing is still over to me, Gene. That's the one you have to get to. You have to beat Justin Verlander in Yankee Stadium. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, and you can lose it. He can pitch a bad game, and somebody can get a home run. It doesn't matter, because if you get a well-rested Cole, then that's a problem, period, at home in a seventh game.
Exactly. And really, I mean, oddly enough, that's what the Yankees are hoping for, is to get to the seventh game, and then you can, all bets are off. And really all bets are off at this point for them. Adam Ottavino has not been good for them, one of the key parts of their bullpen, and they really need Ottavino to get going in the middle innings. But don't be surprised if you don't see a Rodas Chapman in any early high leverage. I mean, they're in a situation now, especially if they lose tonight, to where now a Rodas Chapman becomes, he's not your closer.
Right.
He's your fifth, sixth inning, high leverage, multiple innings. And so they're going to have to exhaust that in the strength of their team. Zach Britton's going to have to be an early leverage. And so it's really, for the Yankees, it's all about keeping the games close to get to the middle innings and get some length out of their starters, keep the game close to have those power arms and leverage early, and hopefully they get to the Houston bullpen. But Houston is really, really in the driver's seat in this series right now.
Up 2-1, they'll play 4 straight, 2 in New York, and then if necessary, 2 in Houston starting tonight. Gene Watson, our guest, director of pro scouting and assistant to the GM with the Kansas City Royals. He wears World Series rings from a couple of stops and doing a great work there. Hey, Gene, the regular season, great players in the regular season become immortal in the postseason. I think that's fair to say, and that's been the history of baseball. And, you know, for an Astro fan like I am, watching Jose Altuve become immortal, I mean, we know he's a great player, but what he's doing in the postseason now, more home runs than any second baseman ever. And I thought you saw in Game 3, you know, the ability to hit a home run on the first at bat and then walk and steal a base in the second and, get a big knock in the middle of that two-run rally they had late. I mean, he's just such a great baseball player.
First time I ever saw Jose Altuve was in the California League. He was playing for Lancaster. And you watched him play, and he was on the field with, I mean, arguably one of the most prospect-filled teams in baseball. But you watched this guy play, and the one thing that stuck out about him was his IQ for the game, his energy level for the game. And as you begin to dig on him and his makeup and the things that you knew about him, you know, his preparation is second to none. And, I mean, this guy is fearless on the baseball field, is what you have to be. And second to that, he's ultimately prepared. He does a great job of knowing what the situations are going to be, what the pitchers are going to do to him. And he's truly, truly a remarkable player and a remarkable story. I don't know if you guys know his story, but this is a guy that went to a tryout camp in Venezuela and was basically sent home at the end of the day and went back the next day and told him he wanted to try out again. And they weren't going to let him. And they did, and signed him for $10,000 from there, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
I mean, truly one of the great stories of perseverance, and just his makeup and intelligence make him a tremendous player.
You know, Gene, I think the Yankees so far have been lucky. I love watching Torres at bat. I mean, I think he's great. When there's two strikes, that's when I love watching him, the way he bears down, and his seriousness and his maturity about taking bats, especially with two strikes on him. Right now, I think the Yankees are living on borrowed time, unless they get a great performance against Verlander, because Bregman hasn't really broken out yet. He's been, you know, a little up and down, but that dude is the guy who really scares me on the Astros baseball team. If Bregman breaks out, then that's real live problem for the Yankees.
Well, and if I had told you the Astros were going to be up 2-1 and Springer was hitting 083 and Bregman was hitting 143 and you know, Correa was hitting 167, you would say, there's no way that's possible. And that's what's happened. And now you're going back to their ballpark for the last few games of the series where they can, they play their best baseball. So, I mean, when you line this thing up, I mean, it's really like a one-inning proposition for the Yankees the rest of the way. They cannot afford to fall behind in any one game, and they certainly can't fall behind 3 or 4 runs in a game or they're in a lot of trouble.
Gene Watson is with us. Speak to Bucky's point about Gleyber Torres. I mean, he's 22, but he plays like he's 32. I mean, he was a prize, trade piece from the Cubs. But, in that lineup of great hitters, I mean, he's as good as it gets.
Tremendously gifted player. He's one of those players that the Yankees identified early in trade that, it is extremely hard, as Bucky, as you know, to play in New York City. And to be young and that talented with all the distractions off the field, the Yankees have just done a tremendous job of identifying that this kid was mature enough to handle that, because you have no idea, what a young player is going to do when they go get to New York City. And they've done a tremendous job of having this kid prepare and surrounding him with the right type of veterans to be successful. And just one of the better trades, when you can trade a guy and get a player like him back and then re-sign that player in Rose Chapman, that's one of the best gifts that you can get in baseball. But the Yankees just do such a great job of managing their young players in New York City. You look at Gio Urshela, who is basically a journeyman with the Cleveland Indians in the minor leagues, and he comes to New York, and now he's turned into a very good player. And that's the one thing that, and you know about Yankee pinstripe magic, and it certainly worked with Torres as well.
Is he much more advanced than Jeter was, the Hall of Famer Derek Jeter, at this time in his career?
I don't think so, because I think Jeter was just, he was just such a special player all the way up, and he had had some struggles in the minor leagues, and that was just probably more of a prepared to be the captain of the team and to know what, being a lifelong Yankee was going to be. And Torres certainly has those possibilities, but he is a tremendously gifted young player that fits that ballpark, that's kind of the catalyst for that offense, and just a fun player to watch play.
One other thing on Alex Bregman, Gene. I tweeted a shirt that Jose Altuve was wearing yesterday that says, "Always be yourself." And then in orange, it says, "Unless you can be Bregman, then always be Bregman," which kind of goes to that locker room. They made up shirts to make fun of him. That kid walked into a very talented locker room, cocky and brash, but also appreciative of where he was. And the players love it. I mean, he's become their best player pretty quickly. But at the same time, they love his cocky attitude and they love how confident Alex Bregman is.
Well, Alex has always felt at home in Houston. I mean, he was a kid that played at LSU. He was, a very, very high pick for them and was number one pick. And he's just a fearless player. And when you look at players on this type of stage, they just have no fear. They're just going to let it loose. They're not worried about mistakes. They've played so many games in their lives on big stages that this doesn't faze them at all. And Alex just got such a great personality. The first time I ever saw him play was in Farmington at the Connie Mack World Series. He had just graduated from high school, and he was the best player in the tournament. And you just knew when he walked on the field that this kid had all the leadership qualities in the world, loved to play the game, was loose. And he's a baseball rat. When he's not playing baseball, he's watching baseball. And so you just learn so much from that type of pedigree that it's transcendent in him being a star at the major league level.
Last thing, Gene, the Gerrit Cole performance so far. I mean, the Astros have a chance to be an historic team. They've got 112 wins right now. They need 6 more. But what Gerrit Cole is doing this season and in this postseason, I mean, talk about legendary stuff. I mean, maybe one of the best, pitching seasons of all time.
Yeah, when you think about guys that do this in their free agent year, I mean, tell me the last time, just think about what the bidding is going to be for this guy this winter.
No.
I mean, essentially, if you are a winning team right now, if you have a chance to win a World Series right now, and it's what made the acquisition for Houston so great, is that they had won the World Championship, and they knew that when you win a World Series, there's so much psychology that goes into winning it again, because in April and May, you don't sneak up on anybody, and you've got to be good on top of good the second time. And Jeff Lew now did a tremendous job of recognizing that and going out and getting Gerrit Cole. And I don't think I've ever seen a guy on this kind of run with this type of stuff in his free agent year where, I mean, this winter, the sky's the limit as to what this guy's contract could be as a free agent.
You know, Gene, but before we let you go, if you can check your files, you know, there was a game played on Friday, and we can't find any
Saturday
from any highlights of the Yankees win.
We can't find the highlights of the Yankees victory.
We can't find any of those highlights in a 7-0. They may have sent them to you. Can you check your files and see if you can send some of those highlights back of you know, of Tanaka's win? Because we can't seem to find them. We didn't have any to play when we came back, so...
They got real quiet on you, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, they just lost the file.
Well, because then they won on Sunday. So then we played the highlights from Sunday.
Yeah, so they played the highlights from Sunday, yeah.
Hey, Gino, thanks a lot. We know it's early out there in the desert and appreciate the perspective. Yankees need a win tonight for sure. Tanaka and Greinke. We'll check in again and preview the World Series, whoever is in it, next week, okay?
You bet, guys.
Thank you, Gene.
All right, Gene Watson. We'll talk more about those Nationals when we get to next week. Nationals just sitting back waiting. They know they won't play again until next Tuesday when Game 1 of the World Series does occur. Whether it will be, we know it'll be in an American League Park. It'll either be in New York or Houston, depending on how this series goes. We'll talk more about it. Steve Sparks from radio for the Astros does color and play-by-play, former big league pitcher. We'll talk to him at 9:30 next hour. Also give away these Texas-Kansas tickets in the next hour. But next, it's Salacious Gossip and your Blitz. Load it up.
It's the Craig Way Sports Report. Now, here's Craig.
Begins to round the far turn. Texas State isn't part of a game week preparation since the Bobcats have an open date on the schedule this week, and Coach Jake Spavital's practices have been geared toward the road game the Cats will play 1 week from this Saturday in Jonesboro, Arkansas at Arkansas State. But Southwestern University is drawing closer to its home contest in Georgetown on Saturday afternoon with the number one team in the nation in Division III, Mary Hardin-Baylor. And Texas will be at home on Saturday night to face the Kansas Jayhawks, a team with a brand new coaching staff led by Les Miles, and Longhorns offensive coordinator Tim Beck sees some changes in the Jayhawks defense under their new defensive coordinator DJ Elliott.
I think they're doing some different things defensively. I do think that, you know, like we were talking earlier, I think they've put in a system, and they're learning that system, and they grow each week within that system, and I think they're doing it the right way. They're not trying to, you know, just create some crazy defense and try to just, you know, let's win at all costs right now. I think they're building a system. They realize that, you know, at times that you know, it may not be as good, but they're getting better. And they play hard. They run to the football. You know, I like their secondary. I think their secondary does a nice job, and their upfront guys do a good job. So they're definitely a much improved football team.
Coming up this afternoon, Tim Beck has more on his Texas offense matching up with the Kansas defense. That's in our next report. I'm Craig Way.
Where you get that from? Did Tawana tell you that? Did Tawana tell you that? Because I ain't for no games, okay?
No games, just gossip. Load up that blitz. Already a couple callers waiting. We'll hit it coming up. It's only as good as you make it at 447-3776. And the gossip is only as good as the stories we find. It's brought to you by Bud Light. Only four great ingredients. You know, I'll have a couple of those tonight watching Astros-Yankees Game 4. Also the football game Chiefs-Broncos on the other television. But make sure you got the Bud Light handy. It's perfect for your tailgating, all your fun. Make sure the fridge is full. Stocked for a great weekend with ice-cold Bud Light. Only four ingredients brewed right here deep in the heart. Buck, if I told you someone joined Instagram yesterday and crashed the app, could you guess who that was? Joined Instagram for the first time, and the app crashed because so many people began to follow her.
Oh, come on. It's got to be the girl next door.
Whom?
Jennifer Aniston.
I think you saw my screen, but you were right. You're accurate. Jennifer Aniston crashed Instagram yesterday with one post. It's back up and working, fortunately, for you people addicted to Instagram. The Gram, as they call it. But, yes.
What a beautiful woman.
The girl next door who can't keep a dude.
I don't know what's wrong with these dudes.
Boring.
How could you not want to be with her? Except for if you have a wife like I have. Sorry
exactly.
About that,
right.
Honey.
I mean, happily married.
But that's good.
Dead fish.
But if I wasn't happily married, why wouldn't I want to not be with her? But I'm happily married, and I'm not with her. But if I wasn't happily married...
That'd
she
be
would
the
be
one.
The girl next door. She would be the one.
Well, she crashed the Gram yesterday.
That's my hall pass.
That's your... Oh, yeah, that one is? I'll tell you mine later. Okay, how about this? So if you were on this jury, Buck, what do you think your lean would be? I told you earlier, but bears repeating in Salacious Gossip. A woman is being sued by her now ex-husband because on their wedding night, they had not had relations before the wedding.
Right.
turns out that he has a micro unit, penis,
not
they call
so
it.
Fast.
Yeah.
Very small. And she went to Reddit and told the world about it. Guess what? I just discovered my husband I just married has a micro unit.
Yeah, I would be upset.
And now he's suing her civilly.
I don't know why he's suing her. He's the one with the small penis. First of all,
that's just how he was born. She married the dude.
Yeah, she married the dude. I mean, at any given time, she could have reached down there and found out what was going on.
She said every time they start to fool around before the wedding, he'd kind of slow it down and stop her. So that's like false information.
Well, he wasn't putting sausage in socks or anything like that, was he? I mean, this is not right.
It's one of those little canned
Vienna sausage.
Well, first of all, she can't do that. I mean, he can't do that.
He didn't give her all the info.
Yeah, he needs to give her the info.
He didn't give her the full Monty.
Yeah, or
really doesn't have the full Monty to give her, but she should have known that before saying I do, correct?
Yeah.
We all are in agreement on that?
You don't go to that kind of business deal without having all of your
ruling, Your Honor, in
packages.
Favor of the wife.
Yeah. He can't do it. I mean, why can't he do it? He can't do that.
He's suing, apparently, according to this story right here. It could be fake news, but I don't know. All right, there you go. So you've got Jennifer Aniston crashing the gram. Also, I'll mention this. Did you see that Brock Osweiler retired yesterday? The great Brock Osweiler, one of the worst quarterbacks of all
Obama?
Time. Not Barack Obama.
No. After 7 years?
Yeah, what a country.
How much money that dude made? Let's please find out how much he made.
You want me to find out how much Brock Osweiler made?
Oh, that's going to make us all upset.
Yeah, in 7 seasons, Brock Osweiler earned $41.4 million. Thank you very much. What a country. Let's go to the Blitz.
The Bucky and E Blitz.
The Morning Blitz, brought to you by Apple Leasing, where you only have to pay for the new half of the car or truck, the half under factory warranty, in any make, any model. Click appleleasing.com and see how easy it is.
41 mil. All right, first Blitzer, you're up.
Cowgirls will be 8-8 this year.
Cowgirls. Cow patties. Next Blitzer, you're up.
Looking like an 8-8 team.
Hey, Bucky.
Yes.
I think y'all need a book off over there because before the OU game, I didn't hear anybody there at the Horns say that UT was one of the worst tackling teams in the country. I had no idea.
No, we this week all we did was say we made a mistake. Next, Blitzer, you're up.
2 days ago, E. Hogan admitted stealing a couple sandwiches. Who do you think you are, Brian Jones?
No, I stole the cards from the Cotton Bowl. I didn't steal them. They had given them to everybody, and people didn't show up, so I took their Chick-fil-A.
It took me forever.
And I gave them to my kids.
It took me forever to say I stole the meat here at the studio one time.
That was a classic.
Next Blitzer, you're up.
Bucky.
Yes.
I know you'd like to deviate from this one, but it's 8:58, and OU does not suck.
Oh, now they're coming back with this one. Next Blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Buck, yeah.
What's happening?
I know she's quite a few years older than me, but as a kid, I always wanted Sheila E. to beat my drum, man.
Wow, she could play the bongos.
I'm finding out if she's in part of this band on Saturday.
I'd love to know that. Next Blitzer, you're up.
It's 8:59, and OU still sucks, but I think Kansas sucks worse.
You better hope so.
Shut it down! Hope they do.
Yeah, time to turn the page to Kansas. We'll let you hear from Les Miles attempting to explain Columbus Day again. Also attempting to explain why he fired his offensive coordinator 6 weeks into the season and promoted an analyst. See if you understand what the thought process was. We'll also talk to Steve Sparks, Astros color man and broadcaster on radio. Always a great insights on the Astros. He's a former pitcher in the big league, so we'll get his thoughts on Game 4 tonight and the weekend. Coming back, it's B&E on the Horn.